This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, everybody, we're going to get started. We've got a lot to get through tonight, so we will go on with the roll call.
Abir Al-Samari.
Present.
Chris Inkland. Samuel Haithani.
Here.
Kate Carter-Cramp.
Here.
Charles Day. Jordan Dostal. Tony Jewell. Ruth Epstein. Natalie Gonzalez. Sabrina Graham, Bridget Haynes, Amar Nayakali, Kyle Carnuda, Alexandra Piotrova, Genesis Lee,
here.
Stephanie Lopez. Melia Matthews. Harshad Mehta.
Here.
Marina Minnelli.
Here.
Neve Moore.
Here.
Andrew Mirza.
Here.
Chris O'Connor.
Here.
Christine Oinewa.
David out of the count, so it's supposed to count of 2 days without David.
Akash Patel.
Here.
Noriella Perez.
I don't know, but I'm
Damian Sharp.
Here.
Georgia Smith.
Here.
Jack Simmons. William Wang. Josh Washington.
Here.
Anna Lunch.
Okay. We can do a roll call again if we have more people come in late, but with that, we can just go right ahead to the presentation. So tonight we have Cornell President Martha Pollack with us this evening. Everybody, join me in welcoming President Pollack. We heard you at first.
Yeah. I can talk.
There we go.
Perfect. Yeah.
That was fun. Thank you. Well, good evening. Nice to see you in person. First time in a while. I do want to sort of start just by acknowledging the continuing really awful news out of Ukraine. I know everybody has been following that. As I previously mentioned in my community message, we do not currently have any programs, Cornell programs, in either Russia or Ukraine. We don't have any faculty, staff, or students who are registered to be there. We do have a small number of students from Ukraine here at Cornell, and we have reached out to them and are offering whatever support we can. Our faculty have been offering expert opinions in the press. We've had some expert panels here on campus. We will try to keep people informed, you know, whatever our experts understand about the situation. We're also currently working with the Institute of International Education, IIE. This is an organization we worked with before. We're working this time to host a Russian writer who had to flee Russia because of his opposition to Putin and the Ukraine invasion. And also both the graduate school and the university's admissions office are evaluating applications for admission from Ukrainian transfer students and visiting scholars. So we will try to provide refuge whenever we can to scholars from Ukraine or dissidents from Russia who are fleeing in protest. While I'm on the topic of stressors, I have to give the almost obligatory by now pandemic update. I think everybody knows that as of February 21st, we were able to lift the surveillance testing requirements for fully vaccinated and boosted students, faculty, and staff. If you'd like to opt into weekly testing, you can still do so. We, of course, have supplemental testing for either asymptomatic or symptomatic individuals who have concerns. In accordance with the CDC guidance, we've now also listed our campus mask mandate as of the 15th. Some exceptions still apply: classrooms, labs, healthcare environments, buses. Since I'm far enough away from you, I think I'm going to treat this not as a classroom. But if anyone is uncomfortable, just raise your hand, and I will happily put the mask back on. I don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable. We do have a nearly entirely vaccinated and boosted campus. And the cases we've seen, and we've seen many of them, many, have overwhelmingly been mild. That doesn't mean people haven't felt sick, but they haven't been any sicker than they would with various other respiratory illnesses. What remains a key consideration for us is the ability to have adequate isolation space and support for students in isolation. And that's why, you know, people say, well, nobody's really getting sick. Why do you have the mask mandate? We need to make sure that we have enough capacity to isolate students who test positive. That's a requirement of the local public health authority. We will continue to follow science, just as we have during the pandemic. If we do see a sharp increase in transmission or in case severity, then we'll reevaluate. If numbers continue to go down, then we will consider easing the mask mandate even further. Moving on to happier things, I want to spend just a minute, as I always like to do, talking about what's core to our mission, and that's academic distinction, and in particular the contributions of our graduate and professional students to our academic distinction. When I look back at 2021, we did a quick scan, and what we saw that there were over 750 media mentions of graduate student research, scholarships, and awards, including just a huge number of papers in which graduate students were the first authors. And just to give you a sense, you probably know this, but of the incredible breadth of what you all do, the projects range from inflatable braille displays for visually impaired readers, the nutritional potential of red grape pulp that's left over in the winemaking process, and machine learning to predict the spread of antibiotic resistance, and one more, the impact of pre-pandemic employee training on pandemic-era layoffs. I also want to mention a few awards. If I leave you out, I apologize, the accolades roll in constantly, but I want to give shout-outs to the three graduate students who received Meta Research Fellowships last month, the over 40 graduate students who were selected as National Science Foundation Graduate Research Fellows. We currently have 225, I think even a little more than that on campus. Zihun Hao, who received a very prestigious NVIDIA Graduate Fellowship. Amelia Juliet Demery, who was selected for the Ecological Society of America's Catherine S. MacArthur Graduate Student Policy Award. And Bhargav Sanketi, who won the Council of Graduate Students 3-minute thesis competition on February 3rd with his presentation, I kind of love this title, To Be or Not, spelled K-N-O-T, To Be, Blueprints for a Small Intestine. So congratulations to all of them and to anyone else who's won awards who I've neglected to mention. I want to give you a quick update on leadership changes. At the top of the university, I am very delighted that we're going to be welcoming back Elaine L. Westbrooks as our new librarian. Elaine is currently the Vice Provost and University Librarian at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and on July 1, she'll be back here as the next Carl A. Kroc University Librarian. Elaine actually spent 8 years here earlier in her career. She is deeply committed to accessibility and sustainability of academic publishing. She's an expert in metadata. If you're interested in learning more, go to the UNC library site and look at two projects that she was instrumental in developing. One is called Sustainable Scholarship, and the other is the Reckoning Initiative. Both really interesting work. Elaine is just going to be an enormous addition to this campus. Some of you know Emmanuel Gianellis, our Vice President for Research and Innovation. He will be returning to the faculty when his five-year term ends this summer, and the search to replace him is underway. The committee has begun to review candidates. And also, I don't know how many of you know Mary Opperman. She's our Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer. She announced last semester that after 25 years of service to Cornell, she'll be stepping down at the end of this year, and the search for that is also underway. My Chief of Staff, Kelly Cunningham, is chairing that search. There are also, again, a range of exciting new academic initiatives. Let me just mention a couple so that you're aware of them. We have a newly established Center for Integrative Developmental Science in the College of Human Ecology. This is really going to strengthen Cornell as an interdisciplinary leader in human development research across the lifespan. It will bring together people who have expertise in the cognitive, the social, the emotional, the cultural, and the biological systems that characterize development from infancy to old age. And just one more, just because as a pet owner, I think it's pretty cool. I own cats, not dogs. But we have a grant from the Dave and Cheryl Duffield Foundation. And with that, the College of Veterinary Medicine is launching a new institute focused on companion animal behavior. So those are cats or dogs or rabbits or snakes or whatever. Although this is mostly focused on dogs. It will leverage the Veterinary College's tremendous strengths to advance our understanding of animal behavior and well-being, how to enhance the human-animal bond, and it will expand our expertise in service dog training. So this Duffield Foundation grant is also going to support the creation of a new summer program for service dog trainers. It turns out there's actually a nationwide shortage of both trainers and dogs who assist veterans and others in need, and we're going to help address that shortage. Before I move on from academic distinction, I want to add one related point. I mentioned last time I was here that we had just launched a new university-wide philanthropic campaign with a goal of raising $5 billion, $3 billion for Ithaca, $1.5 billion for Weill Cornell Medicine, $500 million for Cornell Tech. We are on track. Our donors, our alumni, have been incredibly generous, and because of that, the period between July 1 and December 31st of this year was our best ever six-month period for philanthropy. We raised $528 million. And I think of particular interest to this group so far, not just in that six-month period, but so far in the campaign, we've raised more than $335 million for graduate and professional scholarships and postdoctoral programs. Really, this is one of our strongest strategic priorities. We need to strengthen our resources for fellowship funding. That is what's going to allow current and future graduate students more time to focus on their scholarship instead of over-reliance on teaching assistantships for funding support. Teaching assistantships are important. We don't want them to go away. You need to learn to teach. But we want to free up time as well for you to focus on your research. I want to say a word about environmental sustainability because we just, again, for the second time, earned a platinum sustainability rating. This is the highest possible rating from ASHI. ASHI is the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. They do a very comprehensive, very objective survey of how universities are doing operationally. We are the only Ivy League institution to have achieved a platinum rating and one of only six universities in the world to achieve that twice. My understanding is that the only other American university that achieved this twice is that small university out in Palo Alto. I forget the name of it. They also got this twice. And part of our high score comes from the ongoing work we're doing in research, but also for operational use into new sustainable technologies. So you've heard me talk, those of you who have been here for a while, over and over and over about our Earth Source Heating geothermal heating system. We now have a $7.2 million grant from the Department of Energy, went to the College of Engineering, and with that, we are on track to begin drilling the Cornell University Borehole Observatory this summer. That's a 10,000-foot hole, and it will give us essential data on the viability of scaling up the full Earth Source Heat project. So watch out for more about that. We also have a new initiative. It's called the Cornell 2030 Project. It's housed in the Cornell Atkinson Center for Sustainability, and we're going to use that initiative to bring our breadth and depth of expertise to bear on the global crisis of climate change. We have hired a new director, Ben Furness, alumnus, class of 06, also former director of New York City Mayor's Office of Climate and Sustainability. And things are just full steam ahead there. And again, watch for more on that. Wellness, always of interest to this group. I mentioned the pandemic. All of us know that we're 2 years into this. We recently celebrated is the wrong word. We recently had the 2-year anniversary. I think every single one of us here, just like, frankly, just about everyone around the world, has coped with stresses and challenges. And they're different for different people, family, caregiving, in-person, remote work, physical and mental health, on and on. What we've tried our best to do under the leadership of Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer Mary Opperman and Vice President for Student Campus Life Ryan Lombardi, but also Dean Bohr and many, many others, what we've tried to do is meet our community's needs as best we can through a wide range of programs. The ongoing work around the mental health review continues. I won't read you the full list of it. I urge you to go to, if you're interested, mentalhealthreview.cornell.edu, and we do track what's happening, what's being implemented, what's not being implemented so far. You can really see where everything stands. We're bringing back programs now that we're in person that can help us connect with one another. So the very popular Soup and Hope series is back, both in person and virtually. If you do it virtually, unfortunately, we don't have soup delivery, but you know, who knows, maybe down the road. Also, the new fitness center in Toni Morrison Hall opened last fall. It is available to all students, not just residents of Toni Morrison. We do charge membership for our fitness centers, but students for whom this is an obstacle can receive an access grant that will cover their membership dues. And what we found is that during COVID, information about that sort of possibility, students just aren't as aware of it. So please spread the word. If you know people who would like to use the fitness centers and the cost of membership is an obstacle, we do have funds available to support that. And on that note, I want to highlight a few other specific resources that we have for students who are experiencing financial hardship. There are summer relief grants available to funded PhD students who lost anticipated funding and need summer stipend report. If that's you, be in touch with your DGS. The graduate school will be working directly with them. The graduate school has also increased the budget for the Student Emergency Fund by 50% for both this academic year and next year. These are emergency grants for students who are facing an immediate and unexpected financial hardship. So there's a fire in their apartment, or there's a theft, or they have to travel because of the death of an illness or of a family, or there's a dental emergency, anything like that. Typically, the grants are in the $500 to $1,000 range. And again, the budget has been increased, so if you run into some hardship, know that that money is there. I've been talking about support for the graduate school, but there are also emergency financial resources for students in vet, law, and the Johnson School. Work through your colleges on that. And for international students, the Office of Global Learning can offer supports, and any student can apply for the Access Fund. So if you're having a family or a health emergency or another crisis that's making it impossible for you to move forward in your studies, we do have help available. Finally, on that score, for graduate and professional students who are parents, the provost has offered a special $400 supplement for all 2021-2022 child care grant recipients who are registered in the summer of 2022. Additional details are forthcoming. I know that earlier this month, Dean Bohr sent out an email about stipends effective August 21st, 2022. The graduate stipend rate will be increased by 5% to a minimum of $30,088 for the 9-month academic year, or $40,117 for students on a 12-month assistantship. When Cornell computes stipends, it's based on many factors. The local cost of living, so rents, food costs, utilities, we know all of those have increased, competitiveness with peers, and also amounts that faculty grants can afford, because many students are funded on GRA appointments where the budget was set at the time the grant was obtained. For many years, we've been in the middle of the Ivy Pack plus pack. Some schools have slightly higher stipends, some schools have slightly lower stipends. Many of our peers have different rates for TA and GRA appointments. We have a minimum for all doctoral appointments. And I do know that some of the institutions have recently brought their funding up very dramatically, but it's really important to know, if you don't, that these schools, many of them, started from a much lower point. So there's been a lot of talk about the fact that Princeton increased its stipends by 25%, but their new rate after that 25% increase is $38,000 to $42,000 for 10 months, with summer support left unclear. Our new rate is $40,117. So they did increase by a larger percentage, but they were way below us when they started. And additionally, frankly, Princeton's just much wealthier than us. Their endowment per student is an order of magnitude bigger than ours. They're in a different universe of funding resources. We're doing our best through the campaign to increase the resources we have, but they're a very small school with a very large endowment. One more note for international students. We are planning now for our first ever International Student Career Fair. This is a collaboration between Alumni Affairs and Development, Global Cornell, and Career Services. It's scheduled for late April. It is specifically for international students, undergraduate, graduate, and professional. We're recruiting firms that have openings for international students around the world. We have been hearing from our international students that their number one concern was postgraduate job options. And we were hearing that the Cornell career fairs were often oriented much more to domestic students. So Global Cornell worked with our Office of Alumni Affairs to reach out to international alumni with business connections and ask them to connect us with their HR departments. The first fair is going to be a pilot, and if it goes well, we'll be having a regular international career fair in October. And finally, and then I'll take your questions, feels like the semester just started, but commencement is actually just 2 months away. We are looking forward to an in-person celebration. We've made changes to the traditional schedule, both to better accommodate safety and capacity constraints at Shelcock, and to ensure that each graduate can have seating for four guests. We expect some additional tickets to be available to students who need more, but everyone will be guaranteed at least four. In order to accommodate this, we're going to have two separate graduations on Saturday, divided out by college, and then we'll have the ceremony, the hooding ceremony for new PhDs on Saturday afternoon. So I look forward to celebrating with those of you who are graduating this year. And that's my report, and I'm happy to take questions.
All right, thank you so much, President Pollack. So with the questions, we're going to do, we'll try to go alternate in person and then online.
Okay.
So we can start. Any questions from inside the room? Yeah, Walker.
Hi. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to be here. I wanted to ask you about one of the less fun topics, which was COVID and the university's responsibility. It's my understanding that right now there's an uptick of cases across the Atlantic, and that there's some speculation as to whether that could lead to an increase in cases in the United States. I was wondering if the people who made ultimately make the decisions at Cornell regarding response to COVID were looking at that and whether they had any thoughts or particular concern or are not concerned.
Yeah. No, it's a really good question. Of course we're looking at that. I mean, we are constantly updating our model with the best epidemiological information we have, and that includes what we're seeing around the world. I will tell you that already about half of our cases are BA2. So BA2, which is the new Omicron variant, is here. We saw an uptick a couple of weeks ago. We tracked that very carefully. We were ready to do away with the mask mandate, but we waited until we saw that it flattened out. At this point, as I say, our primary concern is isolation space, because we have seen, and now it's true, I don't want to minimize the fact that there are people who are immunocompromised and they're going to have to take precautions, but this is going to be with us forever, and it's always going to be a balancing act. At this point, we don't think that we're going to have an issue with, our models don't suggest to us that we'll have an issue with isolation space. We are holding off on getting rid of the classroom mask mandate while that settles out. But yeah, that's absolutely part of our modeling. We're not overly concerned, but we are concerned and we're watching it.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Great. Any questions online?
No.
Okay. Questions in the room? Yeah, go ahead.
Hi.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but last week we had an incident of one of our graduate students, a leading student, talked about genocide in one of her classes, and was mentioned formed in a walkout from her fellow kids. The incident has made national headlines, actually, so and I'm pretty sure the results of your office may have been briefed on this, but I'm interested in if you have any just general thoughts about, I guess, the way in which and also, you know, the issue we talked about a really important debate around veteran freedom. We know that Cornell has raised millions of dollars from Chinese illness. And I guess
that's not true.
It
not true.
Okay.
Yeah, but we don't take money from Huawei anymore. We stopped our Huawei donations,
okay.
Except in several years ago.
Excellent. Okay, donations aside, what is the university bank on genocide? If the United States can declare that, what is stopping
Well, look. Yes, the university does not support genocide. And you're right, the U.S. State Department has said that China has committed genocide against the predominantly Muslim Uyghurs and others. We don't condemn that. Of course, we don't condone that. We condemn it. But look, one of the aspects of Cornell that we value the most is that we've got a campus community of people with very diverse backgrounds, very diverse perspectives, very diverse experiences. And often there are circumstances when those people are together in a classroom or outside of the classroom, and they need to deal with very difficult, very challenging issues, issues with political and ethical and moral aspects to them. And that was the conversation that was happening at the CIPA colloquium. Is the decision to get up and walk out an acceptable form of expression of free speech? Absolutely it is. What's not acceptable is what was reported to us anyway, that there was booing and jeering towards that fellow student. That is not in line with the values we hold as a university. So I actually commend the efforts of Dean Barry and CIPA Director Hall. They've been working intently in the following days to engage with our students. They're working not only to help ensure Riz's well-being. Riz is the student, the Uyghur student, who was speaking about her brother's imprisonment. But they're also working to help all of our students understand the importance of having frank, open, and diplomatic conversations about really horrible subjects, including genocide. It's very hard work, but it's work that we have to do as an academic community. It's work we have to do to help our students be citizens in a global world.
Great. Thank you. We're going to move to Simon online.
Hi, this is Simon from China, and thank you for mentioning the topic. I just heard recently, very recently, about the issue, and it was a pity about that unhappy incident. And also, I would like to emphasize my viewpoint that when we talk about such kind of issues, it is important that we be very objective, and that means we respect everyone's feeling, in fact, including on the persons on any side. And also, we should respect the facts and divide the facts from opinions. So that also means that we don't simply judge a country or someone from any just based on any opinion. That is something that I would like to share. And thank you for the position that you have taken. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have any more questions either online or in the room? Yeah, Josh, go ahead.
Thank you. You mentioned the campaign, and I'm wondering if Cornell Giving Day factors into the campaign, or is that separate?
Yeah. No, and thank you for everyone who gave to Cornell Giving Day. I think we broke the record. Do either of you remember how much it was? Was it $12.7
million.
It absolutely figures into it. You know, we talk a lot about the big gifts, the naming gifts, the gifts that let us create the School of Public Policy, for which, of course, we're incredibly, incredibly grateful. But every gift matters. And if you gave $50 to help for financial aid or whatever, we really value that. So yes, Giving Day is absolutely part of the campaign.
All right, thank you. Any more questions?
It's really hard to answer that question in general because it just depends on each individual case. I want to turn to Dean Bohr. I know when I was still supporting students, what I would try to do when I could, and I couldn't always, was send ahead and then try to get another grant earlier on. Although the grants are always, don't always align with the students' research, so it's a little tricky. Dean Bohr, do you have anything to say to that?
So thank you for that question. It's a really important one, and that's at the heart of the entire analysis with regard to what stipend levels are, what tuition levels are, that all enters into the calculus of our competitiveness for grants and so forth. So it's all part of that. In terms of paying a student in continuation who is on a grant, it is generally first the responsibility of the faculty member who's made the commitment. If there's a challenge there, they go to the department. If there's a challenge there, they go to their college. So it's a community effort, but the first level of responsibility falls on the shoulders of the faculty member who's made the commitment.
And so the other thing that you can sometimes do, although again this isn't great, is if you have a lot of students and this happens, you don't take a new incoming student.
Right.
You have to cover the students you already have. So it really is a balance when you're juggling that. I think Liz has a question.
Yeah, just a clarifying question about the support accounts and funding that you were talking about. Can you access those funds more than once during your time at Cornell, or can you only use the access fund like one time?
I don't know the answer to that, but I will get you an answer.
All right, I think we have one more question online. Dalton?
Hi, thank you so much for being here. I just have a quick question about COVID. So I definitely saw the guidance about classroom masks, health centers, and public transportation. And I guess I was just wondering, as far as like the decision to not wear them in a gym or wear them like in a dining facility, I guess I was just wondering like how the decision was made. I'm not criticizing at all.
Yeah.
I just am honestly curious because, and also there seems to be some discrepancy like PE classes. They're like, oh, well, we're not really a class, so we're not wearing it. And I just feel like the guidance hasn't been that clear.
Yeah. Well, it's a really good question, and you're absolutely right that once you go from sort of masks everywhere to masks somewhere, it's always going to be hard to be completely clear because there's always going to be these cases that one didn't think of. The answer really simply is this. There's some places where mask wearing was never viable. Dining halls. Dining halls, you know, you've got to eat. People didn't wear them there. When we did our modeling, we can model what happens in the classroom. And we can sort of model, we can model that really well because back at the beginning of the pandemic, we knew exactly how many people were in what rooms and so on. And we can sort of model what happens elsewhere. But the thing about the classroom is you don't really have an option. Anywhere else on campus, if you're with a group of people and they don't want to wear masks, you don't have to be with them. But if you're in the classroom, you really don't have a choice. And so we tended to treat that differently from all the other cases. Public transportation similarly, and that's why you see in many cities, I mean if you go to just about any city now, mask mandates have been removed except if you take a plane or a subway, you're still required to be there. And same thing with health centers. Moreover, at health centers you have to deal with the fact that you're going to be interacting with people who may have something else pretty serious going on. So that's why those three are treated differently from other types of activities. It's a very good question. And it's a science, and we follow the science. But again, once it goes from absolute, there's a little bit of an art in there as well.
All right.
Else?
Any final questions?
Well, thank you all. I know it's been a rough couple of years. I know that the current war is also weighing on people. Hang in there. Be kind to each other. Take it easy, and try to be kind to yourself.
Thank you so much. All right, so I think we've had some members join us within the last 15, 20 minutes. So if we could redo the roll call.
You could make a motion.
Right.
Yeah, Al Samari.
Okay.
President.
Chris Aitken. Samuel Bradshaw.
Carl Jay, Jordan Dossel, Cody Jewell, Ruth Epstein, Natalie Gonzalez, Sophia Brand, Bridget Hayes, Amara Nayakali, Kyle Carnuda, Alexandra Piusova, Genesis Lee,
here.
Stephanie Lopez, Amelia Matthews, Harshad Mehta,
here.
Marina Minnelli,
here.
Need Moore,
here.
Andrew Verza,
here.
Chris O'Connor,
here.
Christine Owenella, Akash Patel,
here.
Noriella Perez, Damian Sharp,
here.
Georgia Smith,
here.
Jack Simmons, William Wayne, Josh Washington,
yep.
Anna Lunch, and Simon Yang.
Here.
We have 17 out of 32.
Okay, good. Okay, all right. Glad we did that again. Okay. So, with that, does anybody have any late additions to the agenda? Okay. So we can move on to the breakout by division. So Damian has emailed out the different resolutions that we will be discussing today, just so everybody has those for reference. And like usual, I might cut it down to 10 minutes today, just based off of the amount of business we have to get through today. We also have an election for the Student Advocacy Committee Chair. Another thing to think about as well. We're going to reconvene here. So our first item of business will be the election for the Student Advocacy Committee Chair.
Do you need it?
So, with that, we can take nominations for that position. Is anybody interested in running for that position?
What position?
The Student Advocacy Committee Chair. Okay. All right, so we can move on to our resolutions. So we will start with Resolution 14, support for Faculty Senate proposed resolution for including the Natatorium and the Do the Greatest Good capital campaign. So it's something that Kyle has touched on in prior meetings, and this is her resolution. So, yes, Liz.
Can I make a statement?
Sure.
Okay. Not to be a Debbie Downer, but I think it's too late to add things to the capital campaign.
I don't know.
Well, because I asked for the free trade drugs, and they told me it was too late to add things to the campaign.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know. Something's been mentioned about this being added, and I'm not sure if it was the athletic director. There was somebody along the line who was contacted in creating this resolution that they thought that something like this could be added. I'm not sure, but yeah.
So you're both right.
Yeah.
In that the campaign is formed. I mean, it's formed, and it would be unusual to add something else. But the process of creating a resolution brings to the president's attention what your wishes are.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not get it, but there's no harm
Sure. Okay, so I will hand it over to Kyle to present on the resolution.
Hello, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing. I hope y'all can hear me. Can someone in the front maybe just put their hand up if they can hear me? The volume, please. Okay, awesome. So this resolution is essentially just a support of a resolution. Essentially, the Senate faculty indicated that they were interested in adding some kind of a statement about adding a natatorium or building a natatorium on Cornell's campus as part of the huge fundraising campaign that's happening currently. There's a lot of data and a lot of research that went into the original resolution that we are essentially with this resolution just indicating support of. So the original resolution goes into all of the details around why having pool access is not only good for physical and mental health, but why we at Cornell are at risk of losing pool access in the near to medium future because of the state and condition that our pools are currently in. So this is basically just the support of another resolution that goes into a lot of the background behind why including an auditorium as like an end goal for the Do the Greater Good campaign would be a good idea. So a lot of other assemblies have supported this resolution. It's, again, just essentially a vote of support and confidence in a resolution that has been presented by the Senate faculty.
Great. Thank you, Kyle. Does anybody have any questions about the resolution for Kyle? I would entertain a motion to call the question.
Motion to call the question.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All right, so those in favor, can we get clackers up in the room and then the check mark online? And this is just for those voting members, just to clarify. Okay, all right. Those opposed? I believe that we only have 17 voting members tonight. Mm-hmm. So. Okay, all right. So that resolution passes, and I will send that on to President Pollack. And next, we will move on to Resolution 15, and I will hand it over to Josh.
So,
I think we can get through. I can take questions if anybody has any questions. I mean you probably can too. We were in the different meetings. Does anybody have any questions for this resolution? Yeah.
Is there any pressing reason to pass this today?
No, not really. Do you want a motion to table this?
I'll motion to table it.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Okay. So that resolution has been tabled. And now I will hand it over to Damien for I don't think we can vote on that.
No, I can fill everyone in again.
Okay.
We can't vote on it. So we can't vote on Resolution 10 because it requires two-thirds of the body to vote on this resolution, which we do not have present this evening. But at the last meeting, I let you all know that I was updating Resolution 10 based on the feedback that we got in our meeting when I presented it originally and based on the email feedback. So what we've done here and what you've received in your emails, hopefully, is, again, following in line with the student assembly. It's establishing a vice president of finance, and it would simply be the person who chairs the appropriations committee now. So right now, that's Neve, and so this would make her the vice president of finance, and she would sit on the executive board as such. And so this is much smaller than the original resolution. It's been trimmed down quite a bit. So I'll take questions, even though we can't vote on it. I'm happy to answer questions. company online.
So I guess just to confirm then, based on the previous resolution, part of the resolution that has been trimmed is anything to do with changing the current name of the GPSAS.
Yep, so the Finance Commission will remain the same. It's untouched by this resolution. So is the Appropriations Committee, for that matter. It simply establishes one new position and makes that chairperson of the Appropriations Committee the Vice President of Finance.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions? All right.
Okay, so with that, we can move on to the reports of officers and committee updates. I'll hand it back to Damian with the executive committee update.
Again, it sounds like we still have some volume issues online, which we'll work on with the assembly's office next week. But other than that, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Kate?
No updates other than we've staffed some of our positions that we've kind of been calling for the last couple of weeks. I think we found someone for the ELSO position and some new field reps, but beyond that,
no Gorge Safety Committee?
No. No one wants to be on the Gorge Safety Committee, so if you do, still let me know.
Yes, that was
that's just
that's what it's okay. Okay.
All right. Neve? She's still...
No major updates. I'm just working on a few resolutions. I'm going to Frank today. And also being a very involved member of the programming committee, which I'm sure Kyle will tell you all about.
All right, thank you. Genesis?
I don't really have any updates. It's just helping Kyle with the Spring Gala advertisements on Instagram and LinkedIn, so just keep an eye with that. And also, I believe she's going to mention it in a sec, so, yep.
Okay, thank you. Andrew?
No major updates. Our commission won't meet again until April 5th to review March budget submissions, so that's it.
Great, thank you. Rashad?
Have our meeting this Saturday, so I'll have more during the
night. Perfect. And Kyle?
Okay, a lot of anticipation, but the moment is here. Spring Gala is officially happening April 30th. It will be happening at the Stage Hall Atrium. So that's for those who are not familiar yet. Take out your phones, put this in your calendar, April 30th, 7 to midnight. So it will be at the Stage Hall Atrium, which is essentially the Johnson School, for those who are not familiar. I know that the MBAs are very familiar with that space, but the hope was to put this somewhere that was meaningful to our community, and that this was the best space for us. Now, that said, the space only holds up to 500 people. It might actually be a slightly smaller headcount. I do want to put this in context for everybody. There has never been a Spring Gala more than 300 people, as far as we're aware. So we are upping the headcount by 200, but we do know that this is a really big moment and there's a lot of anticipation around this event, so we do expect to sell out. We will be doing three levels of ticket sales. We'll do the first round of ticket sales launching next week. This will be $15 tickets, but only up to 100 tickets. The next week, I think in 2 weeks after that, we'll go live with $20 tickets, again, only up to 100 tickets, and then the week after that, we'll go live with the last batch of tickets, basically whatever's left, at $25 a ticket. We're reserving 75 tickets for students who are graduating this year, and there will be a way for us to gate that on the website. You can buy it any time, but just know that we're holding a certain number of tickets for those who are graduating this year. Also, if you have a spouse or a partner that you want to bring to the event, the last round of ticket sales, you will be able to buy tickets for them if there are tickets available. The last big thing about tickets is that April 15th, GPSA, so our executive committee, is going to be hosting a TGIF at the Big Red Barn. So that's one of the TGIF dates on Friday. And we will have a certain number of tickets allocated to that event as well. So if you aren't able to buy before that online, you can come to that event and buy in person. And then the theme is going to be Big Red Hollywood. So it's a formal event. It's kind of gala-esque. So make sure that you go home, get your suit, get your gown, or whatever you feel comfortable in, being fancy as hell. It's up to you. Obviously, we're not going to restrict, whatever you're wearing. But just know that if you want to dress up, you can. And we're going to have, a big jazz band there. But it should be really nice. So if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. The marketing materials will go live this week. And my ask is just that everybody send this to your community when it goes live, so on our GPSA channels. when it goes live, please make sure your communities are aware this is happening so that they all have equal opportunities to get access to tickets when they go live.
Cool. All right, any questions for Kyle? Yeah, Josh?
So, what is the thought process behind three rounds of tickets? Or four rounds?
So, we only have 500, again, up to 500 tickets to sell. The headcount is still a little flexible because, you know, if we bring in a photo booth, let's say, because of the size of that infrastructure, the headcount goes down. So we just wanted to make sure we had enough rounds of ticket sales to break up the number of tickets we have relatively evenly to allow people to buy tickets early and cheap. So those who maybe budget is a concern, they're able to afford tickets to go, but we're still able to generate some income from ticket sales so that we can use that money towards the event because it will be a relatively expensive event.
All right, awesome. Cody?
Yeah. So for the Factory Awards Committee, that's for one, for I have an update, which is that for starting to do things. And by we so far, I mean me, although not because no one has asked to help me out, but just because it's still early. So look out for updates from that. The nominations are nearly open. They should be opening soon, and they should be due sometime next month. I believe that the date that I listed in the last announcement was April 15th. So that's very likely to change, and it basically every time this has ever happened, it always gets extended. Yes, I am happy to take any volunteers to help beyond those who have very kindly stepped forward already. And there's not too much to do at this point, but as we start to get more and more nominations in, there will be. So, yeah, very excited that this is opening up and get to read all sorts of fun letters and feel good about people's relationships with their advisors. So, that's all.
Awesome. Any updates from any external committees? Okay, and I will hand it over to the graduate school updates.
So just really briefly, and President Pollack touched on this a little bit in collaboration with the Vice Provost for International Affairs, the graduate school sponsored a session on the Ukraine war with actually pulling people in from the Ukraine who are currently in the Ukraine in a session last week, and we are working toward a teach-in this Friday. And so if you're interested in learning more to the point of objectivity and hearing from people on from multiple points of view, tune in.
Awesome. Thank you so much. With that, we can move to the open forum. Does anybody have anything they want to add, anything to discuss?
Just do it, Jared.
Oh yeah, good one. Yeah, so you all should have gotten an email. Probably everybody isn't on the list, but there will be let me pull this up. There is a dessert social on Wednesday night with the executive board of the Board of Trustees. Trying to get what time is it?
It's Thursday.
It's Wednesday.
In the Yale Princeton room of Statler.
At 8?
8 to 9.
Yeah.
It says that everyone needs to have RSVP by 5 today. So if you have an RSVP and you want to go, perhaps RSVP now.
But yeah, if you have any questions about that, shoot me an email or shoot Gina an email as well. Okay.
Yep.
The TGIF party on April 15th, is that only open to GPSA members, or is it open to... No, so it's just regular TGIF. We're just going to have a table to promote the gala.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And we're also sponsoring, I believe, upgraded snacks, too. Josh.
It's not really a silly question, but maybe it's just I'm going off an assumption, but for the Board of Trustees meeting, do we have to have a certain dress code or anything like that?
I would say just
business cash.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Do you think we can transfer the thing? Or not yet. Do we want to wait for it?
We can wait for tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else to add before we adjourn?
Second.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.